Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's okay not to be okay. It's okay to know that you've got some ideas that might be outdated. Yeah, that's cool. But we all have to start from somewhere. And if I think that my child is my biggest asset, then I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that the ignorances that I hold, that I deal with them so that I'm able to set my child up so that they can cope with what's coming, because it's about them coping with life. Now, you can hide, you can run, but at the end of the day, these things will come back to you. So even though it might be scary right now, I would say hold that fear and still do something about it. Move forward one step at a time. You understand?
You are listening to the Dope Black Moms podcast.
Today we've come together to specifically talk about our black boys and our young men, as I really think we're in a moment of crisis. Our boys and young men are at higher risk of suicide than others, and evidence shows that young black men are far more likely than others to be diagnosed with severe mental health problems and are also far more likely to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. So I have fabulous women to just really talk it out, have a think collectively of what we can do, try and get a game plan together. So I have the amazing Lorna Archer here, founder of Wellbeing Well You, a holistic wellbeing therapist, meditation mindfulness teacher and wellness coach. I have Beverly Wong, a mother of two, podcaster and family support worker with Christian International Peace Services. And Beverly is also a member of the South London COVID-19 Preventing Mental Ill Health Track Force. And lastly, Danelle Grant, mother and founder of The Brave Project, a community interest company, a CIC. And the Brave Project is the UK's first suicide prevention service, really focusing on BAME boys and young men. And the Brave Project's mission is to prevent suicide through public awareness and education.
Dope Black Moms.
It feels like it is a crisis for us, for our community. I have a boy child, and you know, I'm always interested in just trying to think of anything, any discussions we can have to further the conversation. There are multiple reasons why there's stigma around these issues. There's cultural barriers, there's systemic discrimination. I think all of which is going towards our black boys and our young black men in this crisis, being in this crisis, and it just kind of being compounded, and the figures are rising. It seems to be getting worse, basically, doesn't it? I mean, maybe I'm hearing more about it, but it does seem to be getting worse. So, Lorna, what signs, what things could we be looking out for with our young men and boys?
Change in behaviour. Someone who's, appearing more quiet or reserved, closed off, not sleeping well or eating well. Feeling agitated, anxious or stressed. Weight loss is also sometimes a sign. Not socializing or talking much, and just sort of just basically keeping themselves to themselves. Those are sort of what I would sort of deem as some warning signs. But then the flip side, Nina, is that some boys can really hide their feelings and their emotions very, very well, and sort of just go about their day-to-day lives, you know, pretending that all is okay, and may just, you know, present themselves really well. So it's a tricky one, but I would say, you know, focusing on some of those other signs that I mentioned before would be some warning signs I'd look out for.
It's so tricky because some of the things you're talking about, could that just be teenage life? Like, what about us who have teenage boys or tween boys? Like, some of those things feel like it could just be teenage boy.
Yeah, I believe so. I think it could be not mistaken for maybe they're going through puberty or adolescence, but we can't really afford to mistake it, you know what I mean? Yeah. You still need to have that conversation just in case.
Definitely.
Yeah. And Beverly, how would you, with your background, how can we support families that are looking to support loved ones when we've analysed these signs or noted these signs and we're sitting down having these conversations?
Well, sometimes, you know, parents are frightened to even have the conversation or to approach the subject.
Of course.
And they can see that their children have changed in some way, but they're frightened to actually say, well, what's going on for you? And, you know, I think one of our problems is that we try and intervene when it becomes an issue.
Yeah.
But really, if we were talking to our children all the time,
yes,
then, you know, you would know, and there would be this open line of communication between the two of you so that you're not just coming to cuss them or to just sort of rail them up in any particular type of way, you understand? So if you're asking me, you know, what can be done in that respect, I think there's two different angles. If you're the parent who never really gets involved with your kid but only want to talk to them when you see something's going down, then the kind of way you're going to approach them has got to be a little bit different, and you've got to be patient.
Yes.
You know, suddenly you're interested in me. Why? You know, you weren't before.
Yes.
So why should I even trust you with what I'm thinking and feeling when you haven't shown that? Yeah?
Yes. So
then you've got parents who are constantly talking and with their children, but because they are, there's an open avenue of being able to approach subjects or anything really.
Yes.
And I think it's trying to anticipate, you know what I mean, that you need to have that open conversation with your children no matter what.
That's right.
And so that when they hit those places of uncertainty or anxiety, or you know, they're going through certain things, they will want to open up.
That's it. So we're creating the environment to have this open conversations, open dialogue. We're staying present to know our children, know they're normal, and be aware. And if we're in the present, we can notice these things. If you're kind of not present or absent, you know, this is when I assume these things are slipping under the net. Mm-hmm. So seems like early intervention is key.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now, with your background, how can we broach the conversation? Like, I can imagine a lot of people would be fearful of like saying the wrong thing. What language do I use? I'm going to like mess this up. Any ideas on how to broach it? Any ideas on language you could be using? Any approaches that have worked for you?
In terms of my personal experience as a mother to a preteen boy, for me, what's worked well for me was just to make sure I had regular conversations with my children about just simple day-to-day things, so that rather than waiting for it to get to a crisis point, talking to them early on, you know, so just ask them about just normal day-to-day things, about their friendship groups, you know, asking them, you know, about their choices in music, and trying as much as possible to spend quality time with them, which obviously, you know, when children get to a certain age, boys, they, you know, sometimes they're either out with their friends or they tend to kind of do isolate themselves at home because maybe they're doing their coursework or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So just trying to grab those little bits of time, whether it's 5 minutes, you know, cooking, asking them for their opinions on a recipe or, you know, about music or, you know, the latest footwear, trainer wear. So just, you know, getting involved in things that they're interested in and like pulling them into stuff that you're doing also. So that would be for me as my personal experience as a mother. But in terms of as the mental health advocate and the founder of a mental health wellbeing service, for me, I would say there isn't, the worst thing a parent could do is not to say anything because they think they might say the wrong thing.
Just
have the conversation. Just have that conversation, because that could be that one time that you stop your child from leaving the house, you know, which could be potentially detrimental if you don't have that conversation. There is no wrong way. You know, if you feel, obviously you can see the signs, potential signs of maybe that they might be suicidal, you know, like Lorna was explaining some of the signs and symptoms. I would say always ask them, are they okay?
Yes.
How are they? You know, and obviously wait for them to respond, but listen.
Yes.
And I think a lot of teenage boys, even girls, I've got a daughter, an older, she's 21, and sometimes she even says, "Mom, you're not listening." But because sometimes us mums, we multitask, so we're able to listen, but maybe might not look at them directly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I would say, listen, show, but maybe show active listening.
Active listening, yes.
You know, active listening. And then, and obviously, and then respond positively to their whatever conversation having with them. Don't be alarmed. Don't panic, you know, because if you panic about something that they've said to you or disclosed to you, then they're not going to want to have that conversation with you or open up again, and then they're going to close off.
Right.
And I think as much as it is amazing that there are organizations like mine that and like other practitioners who are doing the work, but it is also the most important thing is for the conversations to be had at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my advice.
Right. And obviously it's not just one conversation. These are
No. Yeah.
And I think one of the dangers that we do as parents sometimes is we'll say, like, the child will, you know, I've got two daughters, so let me just be transparent. I've got two daughters, but I used to run parenting workshops for an organization which only dealt with boys. And, you know, trying to... having quality time, as you were saying, and Donnell, you know, 10 minutes, but you need to be consistent with that. There's no point one day you ask how you're doing and then Saturday you ask how you're doing. You need to do it every day.
Yeah.
Is what I suggested to parents, and to actively listen, because these terms are terms that we're familiar with, but as an ordinary parent, it means put on the phone, put on the TV. You understand? Give them the space to be able to say what they want to say. The 10 minutes you start off with, which might be painful, soon becomes 15, soon becomes 20, soon becomes half an hour. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so it's being really proactive with it and protecting that time.
Don't talk about when in my dear, me never used to have this a problem because in my dear. That's all good and well when we're sitting down with other people who are like-minded about inner my day, but the kids nowadays don't want to hear that.
No.
Yeah.
What they want to hear is that you're listening to them and you're giving them time.
Yes.
And then that makes them feel that you care. And if you remember some of the things they're saying, they begin to trust you with more. Trust you with a lot. And right now there's a lot of parents out there who their kids don't feel they can even trust them with a little.
Us parents, we have very, very good intentions and we mean well, and we want the best lives for our children. We want them to be safe and healthy, you know. A lot of parents, because of the financial, you know, economical reasons, we are working extra hours to provide, put food on the table and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And what that means is sometimes we might be at home, but we're not mentally, we're not,
we're not there.
Because when you come home, sometimes you're physically and emotionally drained.
Yes.
But we really can't make the excuses, you know, because at the end, I always say children do not ask to be born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You make a decision to have a child, you know, most of the time, and then you need to be present.
Yes.
Because a lot of kids, even the children that do have parents that are at home, they might, 9 times out of 10, they'll turn around and say, you're never there.
Yeah.
You're always talking on your, and especially now with people working from home, all children see is their parents working. Because, you know, most people would say now, I'm working longer hours, I never switch off. Yes. It's difficult to have that balance. So
yeah,
I think those things need to be considered, and we really need to be conscious about being present. Yeah. Not just being there physically, but being there emotionally and mentally.
Yeah,
and being proactive, and obviously us holding ourselves to account. We've got to call ourselves out to actually make the time to do it. And like you said, really do it, not kind of pretend.
Yes.
Listen whilst doing 5 other things, really be in the room with them.
And sometimes
they know, can't they? They can sense that. They know immediately.
Definitely. But sometimes, ladies, as well, you know, as much as I hear what Danelle's saying there, that, you know, sometimes some parents are really busy, they're really frazzled by the end of the week or what have you. But, you know, if you make a conscious effort to say, you know, have some family time, even if it's one day a week, you can say, well, you know, you still may be feeling really tired, but it's the family are still very important. So even if it's a Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, where you all come together, you come together with your children, and get them into a pattern of knowing or routine that 7 o'clock on a Wednesday evening or whatever day you choose, there's a 10 or 15 minute family time where, you know, you can talk, sit down, check in with each other and find out how everybody's doing. That also gives the kids also a sense of stability there, that, okay, well, mum or dad or mum and dad are going to sit down and actually actively listen to what I'm saying. So, you know, I think if we really want to do something, we can do it. So it's just showing them that we are there for them. We do care and we are hearing them and we are present with them, you know.
And I suppose checking yourself for your priorities. What is it that's important to you, and then obviously you would make the time.
Exactly. Making time is important. I mean, I'm away at the moment because I've taken time off work in order to move my eldest up to where she's going to university. She kept saying to me, oh, thank you, mum. And I was like, hold on a minute. Let me make you straight. You're my priority. Work only puts money on the table for me to pay for certain things, but it's not as important as settling you and being with you. I'm not on the phone. I'm not anywhere. I'm with you. I've moved you in. We've set up your home together. We've met a few other students. We've walked around the city just so we can familiarize ourselves with stuff. This is valuable time that we will never get back. Work. What work?
Yeah. That's right. That's great. I hope she settles in well.
Yes. Good luck to her.
Congratulations to her new move.
But
you know, at the end of the day, I understand we've just been through a pandemic and there's uncertainty for the future. And a lot of the work, some of the work that I've been doing, we've listened to over 6,000 people around how they've been coping with the pandemic, and young people have not been coping as well as us. You understand? And I think we need to be honest with our kids that, you know, this has been a tough time. You know, there's uncertainties, but regardless of all that, the most important thing is us in this space. I remember when I was growing up, Sunday dinner, everybody was sitting around a table. Everybody was contributing to that food. And now there's a lot of people who are just eating off a tray in front of a telly.
The dynamics are crazy now.
Isolated, like everyone's in their own room or their own space. It's not the family.
But do you know what that is down to? The pressures that are on families now that were not as much on families before. Obviously, there were bills and stuff like that, but the cost of living is so much more now. And just the family dynamics as well. It's a lot different to when we were growing up. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I think the pressures are so much different now. We're in a completely different century as well. And I think, you know, some of the parents also, over time have been getting slightly younger as well, to say maybe when our parents and our parents' parents were having children. So for some, the pressure is really, really quite high, and they're learning as well as they're going along. So, you know, it's understandable to a certain degree, but at the same time, you know, becoming a parent, you know, even though there are textbooks out there that says you do this, do that, sometimes you have to find your own way, and sometimes the book doesn't necessarily always give you all the answers. So, you know, we have to sort of like bear with some of the parents, but we also need to really be, you know, considerate and thoughtful to the kids who are going through some of the, you know, scenarios and situations that they're in. Because, you know, nobody, you know, wants to force, you know, illness, depression, anxiety or stress on themselves just for the sake of it. It all comes from somewhere. And so we have to sort of really be mindful and have a very open mind about how these things do come about.
I think that's, you're correct in that. But also, I think there's a space where we need to be honest with ourselves as individuals and as parents, you know, and be authentic to ourselves. You know, there's no point saying to a young person, "Are you anxious?" And then they talk to you, and then you're not even tapping into your own anxiety.
Oh, totally, Beth. Yes,
you understand.
Yeah, I mean,
when my daughter says something to me, you know, and I say to her, "Well, that scares me, but the way in which I'm dealing with it is this way, and this is what I'm trying to have a positive mindset on it." So I understand your fear, and you know, I understand it. We've got the same sort of fear; it's just different. I've got the risk of some more responsibilities than you, but fear is fear. So how are we going to try and work our way through this? You know, let's try and see if we can take some steps together that will help us to sort of overcome. So if you're feeling a certain way, talk to me, come and talk to me. I will do my very best. Yeah, I'm not the expert. And if I don't know the answers, I'm willing to try and find them. I'm willing to do stuff to help you. Like, for example, when my daughter went through the lockdown, she was away from home, right? And she was fearful about the lockdown. She didn't know what was going to happen. Students were leaving the university campus in droves, leaving the halls of residence. And I said to her, "It's a difficult time. It is a difficult time. The whole world at the moment is running around thinking like headless chicken." And I was saying to her, "One of the things, you need a space where you can talk about your fears and anxiety. Now, I know you want to talk to me, but sometimes it's better to talk to someone." So anyway, I got her a counselor.
Oh, good.
So that she could have a course of talking with somebody else about the things, that they could make suggestions that I might not have been making because I'm too close to it. All I wanted to do was get in my car and go and get my Pitney. You understand?
Yeah.
I was like, "You know what, in this space at this time, I can't do that, but I'm not leaving you on your own." And sometimes some parents, they will see their kids going through something and they'll just be like, "I'm scared and I don't know what to do." Well, if you're scared and you don't know what to do, then find out somebody who might be able to help.
I hear that, Bev, and I salute you for being the mother that you are for your daughter. But what I'll caveat that with, I hear what you're saying about some parents who might think, okay, well, if they don't know what to do with the fear that is engrossing them, that they should. Not everybody is programmed that way. So, you know, a child might be coming to that particular parent saying, "I need your help," or they're showing signs of that they need help. And that parent just may not even know where to start. So I think we have to, I go back to what I'm saying about have an open mind, because there are some people who are natural parents and some people who have just become a parent, you know, but not necessarily knowing all that comes with parenting. So that fear, they may just be, you know, really sort of crippled by that fear and still not be able to help their child combat theirs.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
But you see, I mean, you can go to the school. Every school has got a mental well-being person.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, if your child is in school and you don't know, you can go to the school, speak to the head of year and just say, you know, what have you got in place to support a child that might be anxious? You don't have to say they're gonna do lally or nothing like that. You just calmly ask for if there's a mentor in service, or if there's a well-being or counselor that my child can speak to, so that we can, you know, can we together, me and the school, can try and support what's happening for my child.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, I understand. I'm going to come with another caveat. Sorry.
Okay.
with my holistic wellbeing therapist hat on, I'm going to come with another caveat and say all of your points are absolutely valid, and I am with you. I'm with you on that, but I'm also coming from another angle where, yes, that might be the scenario where somebody has got a child who's struggling. The parent can see that the child is struggling, but the parent is also struggling themselves, or they may be in a place where they may feel slightly ashamed or embarrassed or frightened themselves to say, I need to go and speak to somebody in the school or another professional to highlight that my child or somebody in my family may be struggling with X, Y, and Z. That parent themselves may also be coming from a certain place where for them to go and reach out to get help for their child, which they know is going to be for the good of the child, that still may bring up some kind of fear or anxiety in that parent that it could have ramifications. Oh, if I go to see the wellbeing team in my school, what does that mean? Does it mean that social services may be involved? Whatever it is. So I always say, you know, we have to sometimes play devil's advocate and look at the broader picture. I have clients who come to me with different kinds of scenarios, and sometimes, you know, you might think it's a quick fix, or, well, why haven't you thought about this, whatever, but that person's coming from the place that they're coming from, and it might seem very simple or black and white to another person, but being in that person's shoes, it may not be the same.
Dope Black Moms.
Danelle, everything you're doing day to day with the Brave Project, are there any myths around suicide and mental health conditions that you come across often, like anything that's harmful to our young Black boys and men that we could maybe squash today?
Okay, so the myth is, if you see a child maybe from who you might assume comes from a troubled background, that they potentially will be most at risk. That isn't necessarily true. You could have a child that's come, you know, that is part of a family that appears to the outside world to be, a close-knit family that has the most support. Just because a child doesn't show that they are having or yes. going through a hard time doesn't mean that they don't need that support. It's to not make assumptions. Yes. I would say that that is one of the things that, that people need to do, not make assumptions based on perception. So not to judge a situation because of, you know, maybe society or what society might think that a person who's suicidal or a person who might have mental health struggles yeah. might look like or sound like. We all are at risk of, you know, struggling. We all can struggle with our mental health, and potentially every young person is vulnerable.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to not judge. I mean, that's part of the reason why we can get ourselves into a space anyway, isn't it? If you feel judged or...
The biggest thing would be not to judge a situation, not to judge a person, yeah. You know, on their parents, on their background. Every young person is at risk. So yeah. I'd say that would be the best thing to do. So every young person, you know, needs to be spoken to, needs to be heard, needs to be listened to. And
need to know they're valued, need to know they're mattered.
Yeah.
Needs to know they're seen and heard. Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, that's what we all need, isn't it? Yeah. But I hear you. It's vital for everybody to feel those things, feel like they're seen. I remember speaking to a friend who was depressed, who was suffering, who was struggling, and eventually committed suicide.
Mm.
And I, before this conversation, I remember looking back on everything that we had spoken about. And it seemed like he really committed to suicide being the only answer. Like he'd gone through every possibility, every rational thought. And I remember him saying that every relationship in his life would be better if he wasn't here. Like that was his, he'd really rationalized that. And Lorna, I was just, because it might be difficult for people to understand the mental state. It might be, people might think the typical thing, you know, man up or just talk, or is it really that bad? But I was just wondering, Lorna, could you speak to the mental state of somebody who might be suffering with or having suicidal thoughts, just to try and grasp the sort of weight that they're under? I mean, I know it's a big one.
It's a big one, and I'm really sorry to hear about your friend as well, Nina. Thank you. It's it truly is a big one, and it's something that is very sensitive to me. It touches my heart in a really big way, because I lost my 16-year-old nephew to suicide in 2018. So that so that question is such a big question, because, you know, if I was to say how you know, my nephew was, and for me to speak to his mental state, you know, sometimes you know, as I said, sometimes some people can present themselves as, you know, being okay. Mm. You may go through those checks of asking how they are, what's going on with them, you know. But I think that the most I could really say to anybody's mental state is, you know, to know that they're not alone. There is support, you know, there's help out there, allowing them to really be their authentic self and speak their truth, share their problem. The problem to them may feel so huge, just like what you said about your friend, Nina. Yeah. You know, try and signpost them to organizations or to someone who can help them. So, you know, the likes of Danelle's organization. But sometimes I think when somebody is in that space, sometimes you feel that you can't do anything more. But I would personally say, keep at it, keep speaking, keep showing that person the love and the support, and knowing that, you know, you're there for them. Because we did that with my nephew. We did all of that. And but, you know, sometimes the issue for them is bigger than what we can imagine, because we're not in their shoes.
That's it.
We're not in their shoes, and You know, I would never have foreseen that something like this would have happened within our family and just so close. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's only 3 years down the line and it's still very raw, very real. And we're still trying to navigate that process of knowing his mental state. So it's a big question, Nina. So I know I don't think I've fully answered it, but it's quite a big question. And I'm somebody who is closely connected to somebody who has taken their life, somebody who's very young, young black boy. And I am still trying to process myself as his auntie, really and truly how his mental state was. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing. I know it's a really vast question, and there's not one answer. I just think it's really important for people to understand that it's not black and white.
No.
It's not simple. It's not linear. It's constantly moving. And the conversations that I was having with my friend, where he was convinced that this was the only route.
Yes.
This was it. And so if you imagine all the relationships in your life, your children, your parents, your friends, your partner, he was convinced that everybody would be better if he wasn't there.
And he'd
really done that thinking. And I think that is so hard for people to grasp. And I find it hard to grasp. I only have that insight because he was so crystal clear. I've never been in a situation like that before where someone is so, so crystal clear about it.
It's he obviously went through a process of elimination with everything. And you know, I can't sort of fathom his mental state in that, but he's obviously thought through everything. He's looked at his life, he's looked at his situation. But as I said, I think we can only imagine, we can only picture certain things. But I think until we are in somebody's shoes who, so for myself, I've never, you know, I'd say truly gone through a mental health issue. But really, sometimes when I think about it, maybe there are some elements throughout my life where I have gone through some kind of a feeling of unsettled in my mental health, not in a big degree. So maybe, you know, become a new mother and not being able to handle, you know, the whole parenting thing at the beginning. But then there was ways that I got through it. But when you're really suffering with your mental health, I think until you're actually in that person's shoes, then you're going to truly understand it. So for me, I have huge empathy and compassion for anyone who suffers with their mental health, whether it's in a small way or in a big way. And the big way is if they go as far as taking their own life. You know, it's such a difficult topics conversation. But I'm so glad we are having it because we need
to.
I think it's important just to keep on talking about it.
Yes.
And it is a big topic, but if we keep on talking, it might make it not feel as murky. It might make it feel approachable. It might, you know, some people might listen to this and get some ideas of language they could use, or even just the simple things that we were saying, just have the conversation, just signs to look out for. Donnell, as a community, what can we be doing? You know, how can we support projects like yours? What do you need? Because you're on the ground with this, you're in the trenches. So what can we be asking? How can we support our boys?
Things that I would encourage parents, people in the community, that whether you work with young black men, black and ethnic minority men, or whether you are a parent, is to be there for your child, listen to your child and encourage your child. In terms of the work that we do at the Brave Project, you know, we hold space for young men. You know, we have conversation-based wellbeing workshops, and I would encourage anybody that's, you know, ever anybody that has a young son that has an opportunity to attend a workshop that we have, is to please send them. You know, share our posts, you know, we always provide, you know, advice around how to talk to your children about, you know, their mental health and their well-being, helping parents to understand, you know, the reasons why young men may be struggling with their mental health, and, you know, promoting a space where, you know, young men do not feel judged.
For me,
and even this year, the theme for World Suicide Prevention Day is hope. So the number one thing that we could all do, whether we're parents, carers, practitioners, is to, you know, provide, give our children hope, and men in particular, because, you know, men are at highest when it comes to suicide. You get more men, you know, under the age of 49 committing suicide than women. So it'd be to give them hope, you know, have the, as I think it was Lorna, you said, have the conversation, keep talking about their mental health, encouraging them to talk about how they feel, removing that stigma, you know, normalizing the conversation, and, you know, telling them in so many words, but basically they don't have to man up. They can talk about it and, you know, signposting them, you know.
That's great, great advice. And again, everything you're doing on the ground, all the conversation happening, all the posts that you're sharing, I think it does all land, you know, and more people are having a conversation, and it is hopefully starting to be normalized.
Yeah.
Lorna, for anyone listening right now that might be struggling, what could you say to them?
Okay.
I think you're the big ones.
I think there's sort of three main things I'd like to say. The first one being, please reach out and ask for help. Someone is here waiting to support you. The second one is, please don't suffer in silence. Speaking up is really a sign of strength, and that you, this individual who's listening to me, you are an amazing, strong person. And the third one, I would say to this individual, remember that you are worthy of so much greatness and more. And this is just a little blip in the road, but things will get better.
Oh, that's such beautiful words. And even me listening to that, I'm like, yeah, it's this, again, things that we all need to hear.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to hear it, isn't it, when you're in the thick of it.
Yes.
To know that this is going to pass. It's going to pass.
It's going to pass.
It feels endless. It feels relentless, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I know. But just knowing that as I think Danelle said it as well, you know, her organisation, the Brave Project, creates that safe space allows men and boys to be able to open up and speak. And that's what it's about. You want them to, you know, trust you. You want them to be their authentic self in that space. So we need to create spaces. We need to create opportunities for them to feel that they can open up, you know, and to feel that, you know, that depth of despair that they're in, that, you know, we're here to hold them up, to support them. We need to, I think if we can break through that part, it may help. And that's what we need. We just need to know that there is something that we may be able to do to help, because the feeling of despair that you get when you feel that you can't help and that person does choose to continue with their mission to, you know, pass over, that in itself, you know, that brings so much heartbreak as well. So I think we just need to come together and do all that we can. And, you know, if this message, this podcast that we are doing now can help one person, it's an amazing thing that we can do.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Just creating that space where you're allowed to be vulnerable. You're not going to be judged. You're going to be heard. Yeah. And that is a fresh time for our young Black men, isn't it? To have a space like that, to be able to sit there and be vulnerable. That can be, you know, really tricky.
we've all got stigma around this idea of mental health. So I would say it's okay not to be okay. It's okay not to be okay. It's okay to know that
you've got some ideas
that might be outdated. Yeah, that's cool. But we all have to start from somewhere. And if I think that my child is my biggest asset, then I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that the ignorances that I hold, that I deal with them so that I'm able to set my child up so that they can cope with what's coming, because it's about them coping with life. Now, you can hide, you can run.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, these things will come back to you. So even though it might be scary right now, I would say hold that fear and still do something about it. Move forward one step at a time. You understand? One step at a time. If you're not, if you don't trust,
I support you on that,
the organizations
Beverly, definitely.
That you need to go to, there are Black alternatives. There are alternatives for those who are from the Black community, Asian community, and other communities. Yeah, you can find those people. And sometimes you have to get rid of people in your life who are negative and not supporting you, and find people who are supportive and will help you. Yes, not judge you, but help you. Some of us, we got negative things around, negative people around us. And all that's going to do is just continue that mindset of being negative. So be brave. Take the step. If you have to walk out on the street by yourself, walk out on the street by yourself, knowing that you are creating a new path for your children, okay, and for yourself. So be brave. Contact the Brave Project. Look on their Instagram. Yes. There's Black Minds Matter UK that only have Black and ethnic. And I know this isn't just a podcast for Black parents, but we're the ones who do not access the help when it's needed. You want to march after the incident? No, but I march after the incident.
Deal
with it before it becomes an issue that you have to go out and march and have your voices heard. It's too late then. Be brave now.
And it's just that goes down back to early intervention, Bev, like, and unfortunately, within our community, it's recognized that, you know, black men, you know, a higher risk of being sectioned, because unfortunately not being able to access or services, so not accessing services early enough. So what happens is when they do get access, it's at a crisis stage. So you know, us as parents and practitioners, you know, encouraging those conversations to happen earlier. But you know, just encouraging like the men, you know, and young people to, you know, just keep taking, as you said, it's okay not to be okay, you know. Just keep taking every step you take, just keep moving forward.
Yes.
And just saying, you know, encouraging them that, you know, if they do talk about their mental health or well-being, it doesn't make them weak. And also, for one of the things that we do in the Brave Project is we encourage people, young Black and ethnic minority men in particular, who have lived experience, who come forward with, you know, being courageous enough to come forward and speak about their experiences, you know, speak about accessing support and stuff like that. Because if you, what you know, what's been identified is if you see somebody that looks like you, that's, you know, potentially being vulnerable and accessing the services, then you're most likely to, you know, feel comfortable.
That is an absolute game changer. There could be some young men who've never seen a man be vulnerable, you know, who've never seen a man be truly vulnerable in front of them. That I can imagine how powerful that must be to experience.
And we have in on our page, on the Brave Project social media pages, we have a few young men from the, you know, the BAME community who have, you know, come forward and spoken about their lived experience of mental health whether it's having schizophrenia or, suffering, say, having depression, or even just going to get a counsellor because they felt that something wasn't right.
Mm.
So, if anybody wants to hear or see someone that looks like them, I would encourage them to go onto the page and have a look. And this is one of the ways, in fact, that as an organisation, we bridge the gap between the suicide services that are already out there, is by making sure that all of our posts reflect and have representation of the young men out there that are most at risk of suicide and not accessing services. Our social media pages look, so you'll have, we'll basically create posts with visuals of young Black and ethnic minority men, so that we've got representation, so they can see themselves. And it's been, the feedback has been really, really positive.
I can imagine. Ladies, I could keep on talking about this, honestly, for so long. But, I'm grateful for us all being here to have a talk. Yeah. We definitely need to try and do it again.
Yes.
And just thank you all for sharing. And I'll put links to all of your spaces. So anybody that's listening that has any questions, that wants to reach out to anybody privately, obviously, please do. Just thank you so much, everybody, for being here and sharing so openly. Really appreciate it.
Dope Black Moms.
If you'd like to join the Dope Black Moms private Facebook group, please search Dope Black Moms on Facebook. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Please follow on all socials at Dope Black Moms. Thanks so much for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.